Welcome to Geek Actually, episode 71 for the 13th of February 2010. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio this week by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I am fantastic. I've slept for the first time in like a week, so it feels
sleep
really
is good.
And I've already gone through at least half of my daily required caffeine, so I should be all right. Don't you love the size of that can?
That is a massive can.
That is a fucking
big can.
That's got to
be beyond the daily dose.
That's almost the same size as Dave's head.
For those who are listening to the...
Nothing could possibly be that big.
For those listening to the audio, he's holding up an enormous can of Red Bull that looks like you'd need wheels to push it around.
It does say quite clearly on the back, usage, one can max daily. So that means I now have to drink V and any other type of Red Bull, any other type of energy drink.
See, it's been wonderful. Josh has been trying out crack cocaine this week, and that's what's kept him awake all week long.
We Geek Actually do not encourage the use of drugs. Right. I'm also joined, that voice you're hearing, I'm joined by,
Dave Kazeki.
Start again. Dave Kazeki.
Use your words.
Use my words. You know what? I got to just say one before we introduce you, Dave, I've been staying up to minimum 3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, every night for the last week playing goddamn Mass Effect.
Yeah, you've come down with Mass Effect.
Mass Effectitis. Or as we named last week's episode of Platforms, Mass Affection. Well, we didn't. Dotter Ray did. Thank you,
Dotter Ray. From Games Prime. Now, Dave, how are you?
I'm good. I have also been afflicted with the mass affection as well. But my problem is that I've been reviewing Final Fantasy 13 as well. Pardon me. And anyone who knows Final Fantasy knows that you're looking at about 40 to 50 hours of gameplay. Mm. So it's kind of like I play as long as I can until I freak out and then I go and play Mass Effect.
How many hours of Mass Effect have you actually clocked in now?
42.
42. I'm up to 37, I think. So,
and there's still probably, I'd say, at least half a dozen to a dozen solar systems.
You haven't gone through the relay yet, though, have you?
Yeah,
You've done the mission.
No. I got to the mission, and then I had a couple of my people die, and I went. And luckily, I have a million saves whenever I play an RPG.
And you went like that.
Yeah, I was like, I want to pop that goddamn achievement because I'm not letting Josh beat my score. Fuck that guy. So
wait. We're not meeting total score, right? Because I'm like 10 times what you're.
You're not anymore, man. I clocked 10,000 last week.
Yeah,
so,
and I clocked 20. So
yeah, but yeah. I've gone up.
game rivalry.
I've gone up 6,000 in the last 2 months. So I'll get you.
Look, anybody out there who hasn't played Mass Effect 2 yet, the one thing I would say, because we are a film and television show, I will say that Mass Effect is incredibly cinematic. It is like playing a film, and it is amazing. And we got some statistics out this week, guys. I was looking online. Apparently, Mass Effect 2. Would you guys knock it off? Mass Effect 2 has sold now 2 million units in its first week.
I believe that's a Brazilian copy.
Yeah, we're not record breaking anything, and unfortunately, it was actually I think beaten by Mario on the Wii, but. It has done very well for itself.
I have to say that it's funny playing... I'm not supposed to really talk too much about it, but after playing Final Fantasy 13...
Oh, nobody listened to us.
Okay, good. don't ever say that, man. No, after playing that, it's funny. Like, you really do notice how brilliant the story is and how cinematic everything is in Mass Effect 2. And I think Josh brought it up quite nicely. He said that it really does have a... epic tone about it, and not cheesy epic, as in you feel like swept away. Is it not literally swept away?
Don't ever mention that movie again.
Otherwise, Madonna would be involved, and another person's career would bite the dust. But no, it really does have an overwhelming sense of grandeur about it, which I love, and it's like playing Star Wars.
Yeah,
you really do. You're like, I'm a badass. I can do whatever.
Actually, it's
kind
of like playing Empire. What it's like. It's got that kind of dark tone to it,
It is exactly like that. So,
it's an awesome game. I really like it. And if you haven't listened to Platforms, last Monday we did a huge Mass Affection episode. And
we were told we were gay for Mass Effect. Everyone was like, I think it was Psydog or one of the other guys, Snake Oz, came up and he's like, I went away for 20 minutes. I came back. The two of you were still gushing over Mass Effect 2.
But look, it's such a good game.
That fucking good.
Look, I've still got hours on this game, and I'm loving it. I'm loving every step of it, and I plan to turn around and start playing it straight away again. Once
yeah,
I finish,
I'm actually going to try and play a good character, which is a massive stretch for me.
Look, and I actually was saying to Josh, last night we finished watching stuff at 2 o'clock in the morning. I actually still turned on Mass Effect because I've still got those little niggly things. I was doing some housekeeping. You know, you got to go tell the Krogan there's no fish in the water. You've got to, you know, hand the locket off. You know?
It's the end of Doctor Who all over again. You know, you're going back and repairing all those.
It's like, oh, I've got to go back to Citadel.
I'm exactly the same. I look at it and I'm like, I can't have one quest left
all gotta be
open.
Done.
I have to finish everything off. And then part of me wants to go and explore those other dozen solar systems. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll save it.
I just found, when I was at Citadel last night, I found a vendor who was actually selling more system maps.
I've got, I think, 6 system maps. I have every model for the captain's room.
I think I've still got a couple more.
I love. It's so gay. But
all right, let's stop gushing over.
We're doing a movie show.
Thought I'd let you guys go. It's quite funny. I'm just like, wow, this is like platforms, the, you know, expansion content.
Yeah, we're just kind of crossing over from one show to another. Anyway. This show is a movie and TV show, and we are going to be talking this week about, in television, where Dave is finally going to tell us about the new season of Scrubs, and we're starting with that, Dave, so so you're going to tell us about Scrubs. We're also going to review, because all three of us have actually had a chance to see the pilot episode of Spartacus Blood and Sand, and we'll tell you whether it's worth watching or not, and we've got a little bit of TV news as well that Dave brought to my attention, so we'll let him take over on that in a second. Later in the show, we're going to review Chris Columbus's latest epic, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, or if you're in America, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the Lightning Thief, depending on which title you want to go with.
Or if you're American, Percy Jackson in America.
Or what was your other title for it, your alternate title?
Sam Jackson and the I'm tired of these gods on my plane.
If you do want to watch the live feed where we go out every week on Saturday at 12 p.m. Today we actually started at 12:30, had a couple of commitments, but 12 p.m. normally-ish, I should say, at geekactually.com/live, and that's the Australian Eastern Time, which is UTC plus 11. Let's move ourselves straight into some television, Dave, and while we're at it, I want you to explain to me, because I heard rumors about this, and now it seems to have surfaced again,
yes.
What's the story with Neil Gaiman?
Ah, yes, Neil Gaiman is writing a Doctor Who episode this year. Which is very, very exciting.
Wasn't that a rumor last year as well?
It's been bandied about for ages.
The rumor first surfaced when Moffat took over.
Yes.
That's right. And then it kind of disappeared for a while.
And it's kind of just appeared and disappeared, and it's sort of been hovering out. Personally, I would have loved to have seen him write a Tennant episode. Because I would have loved to have seen, because, you know, Neil Gaiman is quite dark, so I'd like to see him go that way. And I don't know if the new happy-go-lucky adventure-seeker young Doctor will be able to
convey. I actually think the complete opposite, because all of the darkest episodes... Well, all of the darkest episodes in the show have been Moffat ones, for sure, man.
No. Not the writing style. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the actual... actor of the Doctor.
Yeah. Look, I've actually got a quote from Neil Gaiman here, if you want to hear it, because it was all rumor and so forth. But here is the actual quote from him now. He was actually talking to a magazine in England, and he said, quote, "As anyone who's read my blog knows, I'm a big fan of a certain long-running British sci-fi TV series."
He's obviously talking about Torchwood.
one that started watching from behind the sofa when I was 3. And while I know it's cruel to make you wait for things, in about 14 months from now... 14 months. 14 months from now, which is to say, not in the upcoming season, but early in the one after that, it's quite possible... Boy, could this be any more airy-fairy? It's quite possible that I might have written an episode.
I love this. It's kind of like we maybe could be thinking about possibly doing something,
like
but I won't let you in on it.
If the planets align and if the moon is in Capricorn and it's this
But he does,
that,
he does
like
his last sentence, he says, and if I had... It would originally have been called The House of Nothing, but it definitely isn't called that anymore. So, Neil Gaiman...
I don't even know if this is news.
All I got to say is Neil Gaiman, thanks for nothing.
I think as of next week for news, we're bringing a crystal ball, and you and I are just going to pluck names out of a hat, and they'll just be like, yeah, you know, I believe that David Goyer is doing an episode of 24, and it's going to star... God, I don't know, Emma Stone. Like, yeah,
just cool. Actually, if we toss out enough, something will stick.
Absolutely. Throw everything at the wall and see what sticks onto it. In fact, there is one little piece of TV news as well. I only watched the pilot episode. It didn't grab me as a show, but there's a show, Fast Forward, which was created by David Goyer. Funnily, you mentioned his name. Apparently, he's just walked from the series, though. So he's gone off to do other things.
Of course he's walked. Everyone's throwing buckets of money at him, which we'll get to later on. But
yeah.
They're all sitting there going, you could do a shit TV show or
or
we'll let you reboot something that we'll get to later on.
All right, so Dave, it's been a long time coming because we kept putting you back and putting you back and putting you back. Tell me,
I know it's everybody's least favorite show, but that's,
tell me about Scrubs, Dave.
All right, look, it's a little bit of a guilty pleasure for me, Scrubs. And look, even I'll admit that they were getting to the end of their tether, coming towards the end of season 8. You had you know, the bromance between Turk and JD was getting old, but getting very disturbing at the same time. Look, I don't mind a gay joke or a bromance joke, but these guys were like, seriously, they were like a millimeter away from a double Dutch rudder. I mean, they were not far off. Everyone was getting a little whiny. It was, you know, it was the same joke. It was the same thing again and again.
Yeah.
So what they did was they switched stations, networks, I believe. So they're with, I think, ABC now.
They were with NBC originally, weren't they?
NBC, yeah. And now they're at ABC. And basically, Zach Braff was like, I'm not in it, which, to be honest, the show is great for not having him in it. I've watched, I think, 9 episodes so far, and the basic thing is that they're at a medical school now. You've got Turk as the chief surgeon, and you've got the awesome Dr. Cox as...
Look, McGinley was always the best thing in that
look,
show.
Look, he is fantastic. I mean, look, he hasn't changed since day one.
No.
And he is fantastic. Now, the thing that they've done, which is great, is they've brought a whole new cast of characters in. You've got a chick who's just as ditzy as JD's character. And let's be honest, she's a little bit of a whore on the show. She's incredibly good looking, and she has her little, you know,
fade-out
moment. I totally had IMDb ready.
I didn't want to throw you on the spot there. I just
yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. let me just type it up while I'm trying to speak at the same time.
We'll be right back.
So you've got her, and the thing is, you've got a very different feel to the cast. You get old people coming in, and it's kind of like, it reminds me a lot of the last Tennant Doctor Who episode, where they come in, do their swan song, and leave. Like, JD had 6 episodes, and now he's gone. You had Sarah Chalk come in for like 2 episodes to bridge the gap. Ted had the long-suffering lawyer. He had an episode in where they signed him out. They talk and refer back to the janitor. The whole show, it has a very, very different vibe to it, but it's new, it's fresh. I really kind of enjoy it. I think they've done a nice job.
I might have to catch up with it, actually, because I kind of went off Scrubs after about season 3,
yeah.
I think, and I kind of went, it's just the same again and again and again.
No, it's, you know? There's a couple of actors you'd recognize the faces, but you wouldn't know, you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't... They've always played bit parts, but they play it quite well. There's kind of like a young, I guess you could say, intern Cox, little surrogate, who's, you know, kind of like the leader of the pack, but a bit of a dark smart ass as well. There's a ridiculously hot blonde Aussie chick in it. Aussies are just like...
They're taking over Hollywood at the moment.
Yeah, and she's smoking hot. And she's... let's see if I can find the cast members. Though the biggest surprise for me is they've got one guy in it who's a little trust fund baby, and he's a little midget, and he's an absolute douchebag. And you look at him and you just go, you're a douchebag. And everything's just, he's a white guy. He talks incredibly black hip-hop street. He's like, I gotta get my digits, yo. I'm out. And I was looking at the guy and I was like, this guy is such a douche. I don't know who the fuck he is, but he looks like a mini-me version of James Franco. And so I checked the credits, and it's his brother. And I was in fits, man. I could not stop. Like, let's see if what's her name? Lucy Bennett. Carrie Bechet is the new...
Carrie Bechet. I'm not familiar with Carrie Bechet.
Yeah, Dave Franco...
doesn't even have a picture.
No. Dave Franco is the brother of Franco. And yeah, he plays Cole, and he is... Yeah. I don't know. It's a very different... It's like a different, but... the same feeling. It's kind of like the same feeling you got when you watched Frasier after Cheers.
Yeah.
You sort of sat there and went, okay, I know all these characters, but it's a little bit of a different environment. So, look, I'm not saying it's must-watch TV or anything like
it
that.
It sounds like it's worth having a look at, though, because for the changes.
It's definitely, look, it's fun. It's great seeing Donald Faison get a little bit more airtime because he was always in JD's shadow. And I think he's a far more talented actor and more appealing actor than Zach Braff ever was. So it's nice to see him sort of get a little bit more of the limelight. And what's his name? John C. McGinley. Of course, he loves it.
He's a legend.
He loves the limelight.
Look,
so,
he is to that show what Neil Patrick Harris is to How I Met Your Mother. I mean, he is like the linchpin that holds it all together because he's just brilliant.
You know? And he's great. And they've also developed some of the side characters from season 8, given them much larger roles and taking them in directions that you didn't think they'd go in. So, look, I enjoy it. Cool. As I said, it's one of my guilty pleasures. It's not the best show in the world.
Like with Body of Lies, you guys, you challenged me to see it. I finally saw it. I will go and I will have a look at Scrubs and I'll report back.
I won't.
Yes. Really? Wow. I'm stunned.
I know, right?
Shocked
just
and dismayed.
Completely different.
I'm taken aback.
Yeah.
I thought for sure that would be top of the list.
All right. Well, while we're on TV and new shows, the other thing that we talked about last week, saying that we would be talking about this week, is Spartacus Blood and Sand.
And we've already spoken about it enough.
Now, Spartacus Blood and Sand is produced by Robert Tappert and Sam Raimi's company, who produced Xena and Hercules and American Gothic. And what else have they produced lately? They produced
Legend of the Seeker.
Legend of the Seeker. That's
I would like to counter by calling this Spartacus Bad Acting and Erection in My Pants.
Okay. I think that's what they you can call it. Well, really? You know what? Yeah. I
was going
to
go with blood everywhere but where it should be. That was going to be my run, Spartacus.
I think they should just call it This is Spartacus.
All right, we showed this trailer last week as the teaser for this episode, but here's just 30 seconds or 15 seconds of just to remind us. This is Spartacus.
You won't get these seconds back.
So, yeah, yada, yada, yada. We saw all this last week, just to give you an idea. Lots of blood, boldest show on television.
The shadow of Rome is vast. And you will yet die under it. To the roar of the crowd.
The funny thing, too, is that the douchebag senator who was talking before, he's actually the main bad guy in Legend of the Seeker as well.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Wow, he must be a busy little boy at the moment.
Except you know he looks a lot more evil in that show, which is meant to be a family-friendly show, much better action than this show.
What we just saw, though, on screen, what we just saw on screen was possibly the coolest part for me, which was seeing John Hannah as one of the guys in the show. And I was like, oh, finally we're getting to the good cast.
And then
it's the Mummy part four.
And then he's gone.
It's like, what was the point? It was just to get his name in there.
It was so that they can sit there and go, look, we have legitimate actors around all of these other people who are shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the show basically tells a story. And for those who think it might be a television series of Spartacus, it's not. He's only called Spartacus because he reminds them of
Yeah, and I love
hero.
The way that they explain that into the thing. It's like, he's like that guy that was done ages ago
in
that was
other
really
movie.
Cool. So you know what? Let's just run with that then.
And there's that great shot we were watching it on, Josh and I were watching it last night. And there's that great shot where they go they call him Spartacus in the end round, and everybody in the audience in the Colosseum goes berserk, and they all start chanting Spartacus, and he's standing there in the middle, and the look on his face is like, who the fuck's Spartacus?
What the fuck is going on, man?
I was just waiting for him to break out and go, are you not entertained? Because that's what it, I mean, it's really just a rip of like, okay, it's like, let's take a bit of 300.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's throw in, let's rip the whole buddy concept of Rome.
Let's
throw,
fuck up Frank Miller's blood scenes.
Yeah, and let's throw in some 300 and let's end with Gladiator. And yeah. I mean, that was really, and the thing was, it was... They took all of these things, put them together, and it still didn't work.
No.
You know, it was so green screen, it wasn't funny.
And I was about to say about the green screening, that was actually a really good point, was if you're going to do that, okay, they're obviously riffing on 300 and the style of the fight scenes and everything else. The only problem is, on their budget, they couldn't make it work.
No.
And so you've got all these really bad, and Josh actually at one point, we were discussing together, we were saying, is this a stylistic choice? Have they actually tried to make it look like that?
No.
And I'm not sure about that.
I don't think so.
I think that,
no,
yes,
they are, dude. Come on, that last scene where he stabs him and the blood shoots up behind him.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the really bad compositing on this
show. Oh, yeah, well.
The really bad compositing.
Sam Raimi knows how to do bad CG well, and this is just bad CG bad. Don't get me wrong, all the boobies in Snatch, fantastic.
Okay, that was the other thing I was going to say. This show is extraordinarily violent, but you can't take any of it seriously because it's all CG, blood, and they've so overdone it all.
I tell you what, I could have taken it seriously if everything didn't go in slow motion.
Well, yeah, that's the 300
riff. And also the way that it moves, they'll cut here, and then blood, and he'll be moving, motioning like downwards, and blood will spurt up,
but it's not,
and to the side and in the other direction.
The thing that bothers me is that it's not even done well. There's one scene in the final bit where he cuts off a dude's arm, and the arm just like floats up and stops in midair, like while a shot's happening. So the body's still turning, and there's it must have been hung on strings or something. It's just like this. And like the body's
and
going.
And the other
like
one
that.
I love is where he walks up at the very end and pulls the sword out of the dead body, and this geyser of blood pours out of the wound
from behind him. Though. Yeah, I never quite got that.
I was waiting for some evil witch to crawl out of the wound and go, "I'll swallow your soul."
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it feels like. Look, so what they've done is they've gone. This is from the Starz Network, which is a new premium cable station in the States. They've gone for extreme violence. They say the word "cunt" a lot because they obviously think we're going to push boundaries. And they
especially the guy who was meant to be like Titus Pullo, Ray Stevenson's character from Rome, with except fatter and less funny and endearing. I mean, it was almost identical beginning to Rome, and you just see the guy's just like, blah blah blah, cunt.
Yeah.
You know, they need to punctuate it Rome style. You know, by Juno's cunt or something like that. Give it a reason, not just
like
throw it out.
The
there
difference
for no
is you watch something like Rome, or you watch something like what's another good one, Deadwood, or something like that, where it's used as an offensive bullet point. You know, like it's to say something intensely.
That's right, and to generate a reaction from the audience from that. The problem is there's no reaction from this.
Yeah, exactly,
because they were just running around going, come. It's just like, come to Tucson.
I think we've just earned our explicit tag this week. But look, we're saying it because that's in the show. But the point is that we've also got, on top of that, so we've got the use of extreme language. And then on top of that, we have extreme nudity. To the point where not only do we have full frontal nudity, although I don't know because I haven't seen the second episode yet, but I feel that there's a complete inequity here. Not that I particularly want to see it, but why is it the women have to get fully frontal naked, but the guys don't?
Because they do.
Oh, they do yes. they? Mm. Okay. All right. So, okay, that inequity.
It's TV law. That's L-O-R-E and L-A-W. Yeah.
And so what we have is we have all this nudity, but I love the fact that the nudity is so thrown away that even in the audience at the gladiatorial battle, there's girls hanging their boobs out and stuff. You know, it's like they go for no apparent reason.
They're like humping the guy that they're with his leg, and then they're like, "Oh, let's have a look. Oh, decapitation! Now let's get my boob out because that's how we celebrate a decapitation in ancient times."
Sidochrome in our chat room has said that's my kind of arena. It's like, yeah, well, yeah.
And look, Rob's mentioned a good thing in the chat room too, which is guys watch this, and it is quite obviously like this is made for like,
oh, come on.
This is those guys.
Exactly. This is those guys that walked out of 300 going, "Spartans, let's go down to the pub and drink like Spartans."
No,
and just
looking across
at them going, "Oh, God."
No, they got one of those inflatable balls and they went home and they go, "I'm doing 8,000 crunches a day. I'm going to walk out in a loincloth and a cape and smite everything that gets in my fucking way."
I love the fact that the costume designers as well, they wore red capes and, you know, it is so derivative of everything else. There was actually one point where I was watching it and I turned to Josh and said, "That sounds like the music from Gladiator. It actually sounds like Hans Zimmer's score."
Oh, the first scene looks like when they have the first major battle against, was it the Gauls, I think, or whoever. It looks exactly like 300.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. They got the same helmets. They got everything.
And there was that one shot where he kicks the guy into the fire. And Josh went,
"Oh." Like, I mean, seriously, all they needed to do was put the hole behind him and we all would have been like, "Oh, wow." If you walked in on that show, you'd just think you were watching 300 done badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this a cam job of 300? Is this a bad grip? What's going on?
So overall, I think what we can say is don't.
Well,
watch.
My biggest problem
you want to see Lucy Lawless's boobies, which apparently are going to be showcased in the next episode or in episode 2 or 3, I believe.
Okay.
But the one thing that kind of kills me about the series is if they had just understated or only used the pausing thing every 2 or 3. Maybe even, I'm just going to ballpark and say maybe, you know, once in an entire episode, I would have been okay with it. But every single cut is not intelligent, it's not well done, it's just annoying as fuck. I know someone's getting slashed with a sword. I don't need to see it in slow motion. Absolutely. I have a remote. I can do that myself.
You see, I want to see something like that where like a guy's reaching for a drink and it breaks in. Slow motion, gets a drink.
I just the film actually the show actually starts to feel like a parody by the end.
And the acting is horrible.
Horrible. Absolutely.
Horrible. Like seriously, the main guy has
And for our Australian listeners, the main guy was from McLeod's Daughter and All Saints, which are two awful Australian shows. So
yeah.
I've watched the guy, and I within 5 minutes I was like, I don't care about anything that happens to this guy. And then his wife got naked, and I was like, I care again.
I care about her.
And then you know.
And then she got taken away, and it's like, dude,
does
what
she
the fuck?
Come back? That's the question.
I don't think I'll be invested in it long enough. I've got another two episodes at home, and I don't think I'll watch them.
I'm not sure if I'm going back.
I may like have it on in the background with no sound.
We actually did say once on a show earlier, though, that you really need to give a new show a couple of episodes before you fully pass judgment to make sure. Because the pilot episode's often let down, you know?
But people know me and know that I give TV, or I give pretty much everything, a very wide berth, and I try and glean something out of it. But the acting in this was so bad. You know, like production values and everything else you can let slide, but the acting was so unconvincing.
And I was also very, very disappointed with the writing of this show. Because, I mean, this show should have been well written. It's created by Stephen S. DeKnight, who is one of Buffy's writers. And, you know, and he's worked in the Whedon stable. He's actually a good writer. And you sit there and go, what the hell happened to you? You know, it's like I don't understand what happened to him as a person, because you sit there and go, you're a better writer than what's on screen.
Yeah.
This is not your style at all, you know?
No, it's terrible. You want to see, I don't know how much studio execs have gotten involved with this and just gone, you know, I can just see them pitching. It's like Gladiator meets 300 meets boobs. And that's it. And they're like, anything that doesn't adhere to these criteria is out.
I got to tell you, the only thing that would keep me watching this show, quite frankly, is the nudity.
Yeah.
And that's just because I'm a red-blooded male. And, you know, I look at it and go, I would watch it for the rampant nudity.
If they have a scene where, like, they're having an orgy, and, you know, that blonde chick. No, a proper orgy where like, you know, where one dude is sitting there eating a leg of lamb. He spits some food on the blonde chick, pours wine all over and roots her. Then I might stay for another episode.
You've been watching Caligula again, haven't
you? Oh, I don't know if you know this. Have you heard? Have you heard that they're trying to do Caligula in 3D? I swear to God.
I'd go see that.
I swear to God, they want to do Caligula. Because I was reading.
Are we talking about the original Caligula 3D transferred, or are we talking about a remake?
No, Caligula? No, 3D transferred.
I'd go see that.
Because from what I heard, the original Caligula was nowhere near as explicit as it was until Penthouse got their hands involved.
Well, Penthouse, the story behind it, this is kind of going off track here, but 2 seconds. The story of Caligula was Tinto Brass was brought in to direct. Was it Tinto Brass? That's one of Tinto Brass was brought in to direct it. He created what he considered to be an erotic masterpiece.
And then
I use air quotes. Bob Guccione produced it, and Bob Guccione took it. Use your words, David. Guccione basically Penthouse dude looked at it and said, yes, it looks really nice. It was the most expensive porn film ever made.
Yeah.
$20 million or something like that was the budget. And he took a look at it and said, that's all great, but we need more sex. Because all the sex was this softcore. And if you've ever seen the R-rated version, that's Tinto Brass's version. Yeah. Bob Guccione himself went in and shot 17 minutes of hardcore action.
He just throws like Penthouse pants in. It's just like, suck the guy's dick. Okay, here we go. Get banged from behind.
That's right. He just inserted those throughout, including the very famous lesbian scene, which is quite hot, where he's looking through the hole in the wall and watching it. And so that's the uncut version. It's just this 17 minutes of porn added into it. And Tinto Brass basically disowned himself from the project, basically saying, what have you done? And I always love the fact that Helen Mirren, who starred as Caligula's wife, I always loved her because she was asked in an interview once why she did Caligula. Because for those who haven't seen Caligula, it's got Sir John Gielgud in it, it's got Peter O'Toole, it stars Malcolm McDowell. You sit there and go, why are all these people in this film? And Helen Mirren actually said in an interview, she goes, oh, I needed the money. Oh, wow. And I just love the fact that she's so point blank. She said everybody else, she reads these interviews and they all say, oh, I did it for the art, I did it for the experimentation, I did it for this. She goes, no, I needed money.
See, I like Helen Mirren even more now.
Yeah,
I
mean, absolutely.
She's a crazy old broad, but I respect that.
And just one more point for those who haven't seen Caligula, if you are going to see it, to see any of these people in the hardcore action, they are not part of any of that.
Yeah.
They shoot these normal scenes that have been inserted around everything else.
It's not the only thing inserted.
Except for Malcolm McDowell, who does some pretty weird shit in that film. But then again, he's pretty weird. Let's move away from television. Final verdict on Spartacus. Josh?
Look, I always give a show a couple of episodes, so I mean, I probably will keep up with it, but it's definitely doing nothing for me in the first episode.
Okay, Dave?
Yeah, I'll give it till episode... until I see Xena's boobs.
Okay, look, I have 3 episodes sitting on my Apple TV right now. I will watch those 3 episodes, and then I will pass judgment, and I will move on from there.
And then we will castrate it.
At this point, I would say avoid would be my call on that, because I really didn't think much of it so far.
Yeah.
All right, let's get ourselves into some film news here, and we're going to start this off. We have a late-minute addition to the show notes.
You're welcome, Stockholm.
Dave actually brought this to my attention. And
1 o'clock in the morning.
So this morning, I quickly grabbed it, threw it onto the desk and said, well, have a look. This is the trailer for a new film called The Losers, based on a graphic novel. And I got to tell
you... That's actually a comic book series.
Okay.
31 issues.
Fantastic. And I got to tell you, I saw this trailer this morning after I got your email, and I said, this is what I expected the A-Team to be. And I will leave it at that. So here it is.
I sure hope he doesn't see us in his bright yellow banana.
Are you trying to say that you're embarrassed to be seen in an American classic? Then we wired.
Target is West Mount.
CIA. NSA. Special Forces.
Hit it.
We're not them. We're the losers.
Ladies.
But even the government's best.
We're in.
And the crowd goes wild.
Please! Clay, we have a situation here.
Get betrayed.
This is Max. Change of plans. The losers know too much. Kill them.
Good times.
We're not soldiers anymore. We're fugitives.
Want your life back? You're gonna have to steal it.
Who are you?
I have a business proposition for you, Clay. I can help you find Max.
What's the catch, lady?
It's pretty much a suicide mission.
That's not, like, foreboding at all.
Welcome back to the land of the living.
You know that if we do this, we are waging a war against the Central Intelligence Agency.
They started it.
That's a badass chick.
She is volatile.
Oh my god!
I'm the Black MacGyver. Blackgyver.
I need an exit. Open fire! Do it now!
Are you sure you've done this before?
Okay, right now, not the time.
Mama didn't raise no boo.
Pachew.
Thank you.
Outstanding.
Stupid line, that one. Very cool.
I'm sorry I threatened to cut your head off.
Don't you two feel so much better?
No.
It's going to be so fucking stupid, but you know what? I don't care. I love the cast, and I love the tone. It's just, as you said quite perfectly, it's everything that the A-Team's not,
yes.
As in a good movie. Yeah. And it doesn't and it doesn't have the douchebag from The Hangover as well. So.
What it is that it's not taking itself too seriously.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it looks like it's in for a rollicking fun time.
See, these are my favorite type of action. I know you guys rag on me all the time about, you know, liking shit like Death Race and whatever else, but these are the films I like because they know that they're shit films and they're taking the piss out of themselves through the entire movie.
Funny shit, because this is exactly how I felt about From Paris with Love, which we'll review later down the track, but I saw From Paris with Love this week, and My first thought when I walked out, and we have a very esteemed critic here named David Stratton, who was also in my screening, and he hated it.
I bet Margaret loved it though, because David only likes the romantic comedies and shit. He's such a chick.
Well, Margaret was there as well, but they sit separately in the screening. It's really interesting. They sit apart from each other. But he hated it. I overheard him talking to a guy as they were walking out, and he said he'd give it 2 out of 10. Right? He just hated it. But I watched it, and I went there and go, it's not a great film. It's predictable as hell. You know everything that was going to happen in this film, but it feels like an 80s buddy film. Mm. And you sit there and go, if you just go and want to have fun with it and just want to go for the ride, it's a lot of fun. And that's what that looks like.
John Travolta looks like he ate the rest of the cast as well.
And The Losers looks like that. It looks like if you just disengage your brain and have a bit of fun with it.
I'm glad these are coming back, man, because these are the films... Not these films, but these type of films, you know, Commando, The Running Man, you know, Predator. These are films that leading into later on, Escape from New York. These are films I grew up with, and they were just, like, story-wise, they're shit. Like, they're terrible movies.
Not all of them are. I would hold debate on that.
Look, man, The Running Man?
I would actually put Predator and Die Hard into a very different category.
Well, they are, but yeah. I mean, like, these sort of films, they just, like, you know that they're meant to be bad. They're meant to be laughing at themselves.
You know, Running Man was a really interesting... I saw Running Man at the cinema when I was actually in film school, when I saw Running Man, and I walked out and went, the film is shit. But it has such a statement to make about media that you sit there and you watch it and you go, that's just awesome. You
know? Look, I've said it 1,000 times before, anyone who knows me, but the moment for me, which I love and hate about the movie, is like when Arnie kills the character Sub-Zero and then yells out, look, Sub-Zero, now Plane Zero. I remember sitting there and I was watching it with a mate of mine, and I've watched it many times over with Suze, and looked at her and gone, somebody got paid to write that fucking line. Yeah. And not only that,
fucking love it.
And somebody sat there writing it going, yes, this is what I'm going with. Yes, this is the line. And that's what I want to see.
But what they would be? There'll be someone like you who's just sitting there going, oh, that is so fucking random and gay. Put it in.
Absolutely.
It's just like the wrongest thing ever, but you know what? It deserves to go in. And Rob in the chat room has said, nobody likes Death Race except when they're wasted. I've watched it straight over 1,000 times, man.
And I hate that film.
And I still like it.
And I'll weigh in on Josh's side. I actually saw it at the cinema and just went, really? Yep. Really? Is this what you're trying to sell me?
Well, look, you guys can go watch films about, you know, English patients and Titanic and, you know, foreign films where people sit there.
Such gross
things with Oscar-worthy material and all of that. And I'll sit in the corner with all the B-grade motherfuckers with a big bucket of popcorn going, woo!
Have you actually seen my DVD collection? I love a lot of B-grade popcorn films.
Because you guys think too much, you know? When I watch an action film, plot optional.
All right. Speaking of bad ideas, Daredevil.
This is the worst idea ever.
We got a few bad ideas. We're going to call this the bad idea show, I think. The first bad idea is that the rumored Daredevil reboot looks like it's going ahead.
Should be with Nicolas Cage as Daredevil. That would be awesome.
Just to add salt to the wound on this, the screenwriter who is handling the reboot of Daredevil is the guy who wrote the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still. So
Brendan Fraser is going to be Daredevil then.
Probably. Or Keanu Reeves.
I'd rather that. I really would.
Oh, Keanu. Did you stand there? Whoa,
dude, Daredevil.
What am I meant to do again? Act. Whoa.
So, look, I think...
Thanks, Socrates.
It says, according to the article in Dark Horizons, which Dave passed over to me, it says, like various rights deals, the studio has to keep producing films based on the property, otherwise the rights revert back to the owner. So in this case, Disney-based Marvel. Now, all I can say is, let the rights revert. Give it back to Marvel, because Marvel's making better films.
All run with it. The thing, like... I mean, this might as well be called the reboot show. I mean, because everything... And what I'm hating about all of these is... Before Dark Knight and Batman Begins, nobody gave a shit. They'd made 2 Fantastic Four films, and both of them were crap.
And they're rebooting that too.
I love them both, but they're both crap. Yeah. And you know, you've got They'll do one and then they'll wait 2 years and go, nah, we're rebooting it. Like Spider-Man reboot. You've only done four films.
Three films,
and now you're taking it back again. They're talking about Daredevil. Well, they've done one film.
What
and
I don't understand
about
the whole Spider-Man thing is they're rebooting a successful franchise. You know, if we forget whether you like Spider-Man 3 or not, that's up to your personal interpretation.
Mm.
The point is that all three films made hundreds of millions of dollars. It's this incredibly lucrative franchise. And they go, oh, it's being really successful. Let's completely redo it.
I hate it, man, because it's like, how many fucking times do I have to watch the origin story of a superhero that I've been reading about and collecting since I was 12, which is 25 fucking years now.
We need your voice here, Dave, because they're actually making Spider-Man 4 for which crowd?
Yeah, for the little emo teeny. For everyone who won't like Kick-Ass. Yeah, that's who they're making.
We need our Twilight Zone. We need our Twilight fan. You know the one I'm talking about. Oh, it's so good.
I'm like, God, I can't wait to see it. That's going to be awesome. Let's go and watch Daredevil. It's going to be great.
Yeah, you know they're going to youngify all of these things, and I'm actually getting really, really sick of it. I'm getting really sick of the reboots. I mean, I can understand something like The Hulk, where you release The Hulk, Marvel basically puts forward The Hulk, Universal is in charge of it.
Mm.
It doesn't work very well. It doesn't make the money they
want
to make.
The rights
revert back to Marvel, and they say, now it's ours. We're going to try and do it the way it should have been done. Whether it was completely successful or not, I can understand the logic behind a reboot like that.
Mm.
I don't understand the logic behind somebody saying, let's reboot X-Men. Because X-Men was incredibly successful.
Or at least...
Spider-Man was incredibly
at
successful.
At least run with it, you know what I mean? Like, Sido brought up a good point, which is one of the reasons why I hate all of these films, is that the first half of any of these movies is the origin story.
Mm.
It always is. And everybody who watches it just sits there and it's the same... They sit there and go, I can't wait for the next one. Because then it'll just be action,
action,
action.
And every filmmaker says that. Even Bryan Singer, when he made Superman Returns, said the second film will be more action-based because we get past all the introduction shit.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it doesn't happen. And we'll come back to that in a second because we have another piece of news on that.
We do.
But, when Sam Raimi made Spider-Man, the second one is the better film because, of course, he's got past all that now. And
yeah.
Now he can kick into it. So, yeah, continually redoing the same film does my head in. You know, I just...
Dude, I hate it. It was funny. It was like when they first started making these. I'm not talking about the original Batmans. I mean, the Keaton Batman, the first one wasn't bad. The rest of them got progressively worse. But when they started with Spider-Man,
person in the world because we had this exact same conversation yesterday. My favorite of the early Batmans,
Batman Forever,
was Batman Returns. Was the second one. I loved the second one with Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman and Penguin and all. I didn't actually like the first one very much, and I actually watched it.
No, I can't go.
That's my personal feeling.
I come from a different generation. In my generation, that was Jack Nicholson was my Joker.
I hated Jack Nicholson as Joker.
Oh no!
Watched Jack Nicholson. And I went, that is the most over the top performance. And all I wanted to see was Joker done more like Heath Ledger does
yeah,
later.
Yeah, but people weren't ready to see that. People weren't ready for a series. Yeah, you were, but the general comic book crowd back then, all they thought of was when they thought superheroes, they thought of Adam West as Batman and Lou Ferrigno and whatever his name is, as the Incredible Hulk.
Don't knock the loo, man.
No, I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying that they had the 70s camp version.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and it's like now... When in the 90s, I was overjoyed. I was like, oh, thank God, finally, all the movies that I've been waiting to see, they've done. And there's been like maybe four that they've done right.
Hmm.
And all the rest of them have just been shit. And they're just going to keep doing it and keep doing it. It's like, man, come up with another idea.
Mm-mm.
You know, fuck. You know what? You want to do Superman again? Do it like they did with the Iron Giant, which is basically Superman again. You know, they take it, Shyamalan did in Unbreakable. You know, take a classic superhero mythology and put it somewhere else. Do a fucking Elseworlds idea. You know, I think if they're going to reboot Superman, Mark Miller, who did Wanted and Kick-Ass, did an awesome Elseworlds storyline in a comic book where it was called Superman Red Sun. And it was exactly the same, but he landed in Russia instead of America. And just the difference of what
turn
happened.
On his head. That would be
but
interesting.
Do you know what I mean? Like, take it in a different... Do fucking The Dark Knight Returns, you know? Like, do something.
Everybody's too precious. That's the problem.
Well, that's it. And then you get these fucking halfway bullshit remakes where a studio exec gets involved and goes, put a cat in it because we need this demographic. Put a little fucking pimply-faced
teen in it. I'm sorry, but that's exactly what happened with Percy Jackson.
And I fucking hate it, man.
Yeah.
We'll
come back to Percy Jackson.
Percy Jackson is the greatest movie of all time.
We'll come back to... Okay, we're running over, so would you...
See, I fucking called it. Yeah, I fucking you called it last night.
All right, so anyway, we're running a little over. We'll jettison that story because it wasn't interesting. The Thing. Once again, talking reboots and restarts.
We can move on. We don't need to talk about this.
Yeah, I do need to talk about this really quickly. Because
this horrifies me.
The Thing, they've been talking about a reboot or a remake or something of The Thing for a while. Well, more details are starting to surface. We're finally finding out that it's actually a prequel, not a reboot. It's actually going to be about the Norwegian camp that they find and what happened to that Norwegian camp. So we know it's going to end in tragedy.
Look,
because
all it needs is Alexander Skarsgård. If he's not in it, I'm not fucking interested.
Okay, wait. So can I just get this right? It's following their storyline?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So
but it's going to be in English with American actors.
Well, American is a loose term because casting has begun. So it's
actually directed by Mel Gibson, and the whole film will be done in Norwegian.
Ancient Norwegian. So far, we have hating Jews. We have a director's name who I can't pronounce that name. Does anybody want to have a crack at it?
Matthias
van Hedgingen. Is it like Syringen? Swedgen? Swedgen?
And he is actually a television commercial director, and I actually happen to have a couple of his ads. We don't have time for both of them, but we'll just show you one.
I hope he's like Mick G times 1,000.
Okay, well, see what you think of this. We'll leave the mics open for this. This is one of his ads. Give me an idea. See if he's in the running to be a sort of person who can handle this kind of material. This is an ad he made for Motorola.
Shit. I don't like any phone that cock blocks a fat guy from getting laid.
So that was a Motorola ad he did for the Razor. And he does have a style. He does have a lot of action and movement and stuff happening there. I don't know how he's going to handle actors because really ads were not dealing with, you know, deep performance or anything. But he's going to have to work hard.
I think he'll get the Thing to emote quite well.
He's going to have to work hard because the casting that has surfaced so far on this thing has been
Joel Edgerton
being cast as the lead actor, and the lead actress is Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Nom nom nom.
Who I actually really like as an actress, and I put up watching some pretty bad films to just see her. What was that dance thing she did?
I
saw that too.
Step Up or whatever.
No, it wasn't Step Up. Whatever it was.
I never saw that. I did watch Sky High though, and it was right for so many wrong reasons.
I like Sky High though. I thought Sky
I
High.
I love that movie, mate. It's got Bruce Campbell in it.
Absolutely.
That's all you need
Side
to know.
Sidekick. All right. So look, The Thing is moving ahead. Now that I know it's not a remake, I'm willing to give it a little bit of latitude.
It's a pre-make.
You know? I still think that John Carpenter's The Thing is kind of sacrosanct, and I don't know why you would go touching that.
Because as we've seen in film news today, nobody can come up with an original idea.
No, and John, look, we're going to jump ahead because John Carpenter made the news a second time this week with the New Yorker story that I have here, which basically says that the long rumored remake of Escape from New York is going to go ahead. And this horrifies me on so many levels. But the biggest thing that horrifies me about this, no casting, no director is put in place at this point. There was actually, at one point, Gerard Butler was being considered for Snake Plissken, but that's all fallen away.
I think it'll be that guy from The Bold and the Beautiful.
But the thing that really worries me about this is that New Line Cinemas is really fast-tracking this into production. According to The New Yorker, the biggest issue that they're having with the film is that the burnt-out husk of New York City is a very expensive proposition. And bear with me for a second.
I've read it.
Bear with me for a second. They're sitting there going, you know, what are we going to do with this? And what they're deciding on is it won't be a burnt-out hulk of a city. It'll be more like a deserted city, like Iron Legend, and all this sort of stuff. And all I can think is, you think it's expensive to do this New York. Did you guys actually see the original Escape from New York? The man made it for $8 million. You know, the man made it on no budget, and he managed to do it. So in today's age of digital technology where we can make anything happen, why are they having trouble with this?
I'm making a call, and I honestly believe, I'm not taking the piss now, I honestly believe that they're going to put an eye patch on that douchebag from fucking The Hangover and A-Team, and they're going to make him Snake Plissken, and I'm going to die.
I don't mind him as much as you do.
I can't stand him. The only time I like him is when he's actually playing a douchebag.
Yeah, but as I was gonna say, if he got cast as Snake Plissken, that would kill me.
Look, to be honest, both of these films suffer from the same thing, in my opinion, which is that...
bad idea-itis.
Well, no. I mean, like, if you go further than that, it's that they're timepieces of their generation. Mm-hmm. They used special effects of their generation. Mm-hmm. And basically, what's going to happen is... You can't make this film. We've been through the idea of remakes so many times, but the reason that these two in particular, especially The Thing, is The Thing was so realistic because of the way they made the creatures, right?
Yes.
And we don't have that sort of talent left in the world.
All I can think is what they really need to do is go back to Rob Bottin, who did the original effects, who was a young guy at the time, and he actually talks about it in great detail how they had no money for an effects budget, and he was the reason why it works so well, as he said, because if you got no money, what you do is you make it as vivid as possible, and so they spray paint everything in purples and pinks. The stretching of the neck when the head comes off is actually chewing gum.
But I think
it's also
the difference between movies made back then and movies made now, and I've noticed this particularly on watching old films on Blu-ray, is that anything that's done with a mask or a costume or with models or anything like that holds up amazingly well. Mm-hmm. Whereas I can just tell what they're going to do with, The Thing in particular, is The Thing will be entirely CG.
It'll be a CG creature.
And it will look shit. Mm-hmm. And it won't have any of the terror, or they won't bother shooting it like the way that they shot it, where it was... I can see it's going to go from a thriller to a schlock horror.
Yeah, and they'll go for a high gore content.
Yeah,
And they'll lose any of the atmosphere.
Look, it doesn't even come down to atmosphere. The big thing about The Thing, and the thing that makes The Thing so terrifying as a person, even now, as to when I was a kid, is the fact that because the creatures are in the scene, you believe the terror.
Yeah.
The second you make something 3D, we are all programmed this way. We all know the difference.
Yeah, but I've got to say that the one thing that the thing works on many, many levels. But one of the major things that we've got to take into account here is the fact that Carpenter was, at the time, he's kind of lost it a bit now, but at the time, from a period of 1978 through to about 1985, the man was the master of suspense. Mm-hmm. He knew how to generate an atmosphere and a tension in a scene. The Thing works just like Campbell's original book. It works on the basis that you never know who the thing is.
Yeah.
It's always hidden. It's always under the surface. That scene, minor spoilers for a film that's 30 years old, but that scene where they're testing the blood and the sound effect of that hot needle or that hot piece of wire going across the Petri dishes, never knowing what's going to happen because they don't even know what's going to happen, was you're on the edge of your seat waiting to find out what's going to happen. I actually say that if you're going to put some unknown director in here who really, I mean, as fun as that ad was, it really is just lots of movement, we have no tried and true test of whether this person even knows how
and,
to put that kind of suspense.
But at the
and
same
no
time.
Kurt Russell.
And yeah. Kurt Russell. Never under the entire
he
cast.
He grounded both of those
the
films.
Entire cast. Keith David was excellent. The guy who played Knolls when he's in the beginning, well, Jared's the gods, man, that practically owns South America. You know, it's the entire cast, Wilfred Brimley, they were brilliant. And there wasn't a single person in that cast I would have changed, you know?
But to give it credit, I mean, like, we can harp on as much as we want about this. And a remake is the reason why we're giving so much, you know, antiness to this situation. But, I mean, if we look at District 9... You know, someone that's done nothing beforehand can do something amazing. I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is the way that these films start. Like, with District 9, you have no expectations, and it's a brand new idea, right? You take the remake that we're talking about here with Escape from New York, right? If you're going to change the formula that made the movie good, you're taking an idea which is bringing the fans from the old generation. These people are the ones that will come. yeah. right? You are getting us that watched the movie when it came out, right? You're getting us, and you're changing the formula without our consent. And that's why we're going to get angry.
Because, quite frankly, the movie studios don't care about us.
Let me counter.
What they want is they want the young generation that's never seen yeah. the original.
What they need to do, in the vein of what Josh was talking about, is escape from New Cape Town. And you could have lots of prawn inside.
Very nice.
Snake prawn skin.
Now, Dave, you've passed this trailer on to us. and I got to tell you, I was underwhelmed, but you know.
That's because you don't watch SNL.
No, I used to watch SNL religiously. The only problem is that I just found it unfunny. But we will have a look at it because you brought it up. All right, this is the Red Band trailer, so it's. You know,
I can't wait.
And Josh actually watched it last night, and he actually differs from my opinion as well. But here, this is the trailer for the new SNL film, MacGruber.
2 days ago, a Russian nuclear warhead got jacked.
Open it.
Reliable sources informed us it's made its way to U.S. soil.
I'm going to turn Washington, D.C. into a pile of ash.
We need the best. Get me MacGruber.
I'm in.
What?
I'm in.
Hello, MacGruber.
America's greatest soldier is back in action.
MacGruber, I thought you were dead.
So did I, but I'm not.
So what do we know so far? The nuclear warhead is now in the possession of Dieter von Kuntz.
And this guy is untouchable.
Oh, I'll touch him, rookie. I'll touch him wherever I want.
Right now, Kuntz has no idea you're even alive, and that is a huge advantage to us.
He may not be the smartest.
Your companion's a very beautiful young woman.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy being date-raped, ma'am.
This is my daughter. Sorry.
He may not be the bravest.
How did you know I was wearing a bulletproof vest?
You're wearing a bulletproof vest? Awesome.
But this spring, when the world needs a hero...
Do not underestimate this man.
He'll do anything...
What the fuck? Now!
...to get the job done.
I just took an upper decker in the master bathroom.
Upper decker?
Yeah, it's where you take a number two in the water tank and not in the bowl. You look great.
Rogue presents...
It's go time.
Let's move.
All right, we got a nuclear warhead. Holy shit!
What's wrong with Gruber?
The fuck is this? It's like a million wires in here. More like a three-wire guy.
There's a green one. Oh, there's like a bunch of green.
MacGruber.
Didn't quite catch that.
Stick it where the sun don't shine.
Oh, yeah, where might that be?
Up your butt. Up your butthole.
Oh, God. Okay. There is only one section of that that really slays me, and that's the wires thing, because with MacGyver, we've all seen it. There always was three wires.
I agree with you. I think that the last little bit where he goes, I'm more of a green wire guy.
Look, as far as green wire, oh, there's a bunch of green wires.
As far as an SNL remake goes, I mean... At least it looks like, I know it's a ridiculous thing to say, but they're taking it fairly seriously as far as a remake. They're getting a decent cast.
Yeah.
You know, and where every other film, they're just like, yeah, let's just like, you know, fuck, if any of you saw Hot Rod or anything like that.
I avoided Hot Rod like the plague.
That was just horrible. But I mean, look, I'm not saying this is going to be genius filmmaking, but...
I promise, as I was saying to you while the trailer was playing, I just don't find him funny and I don't connect with him. I like Wig.
Christian Wig.
She was very funny in the extended scene of Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And she was also quite funny in Ghost Town with Ricky Gervais.
And she played an awesome bitch in Knocked Up.
Yes.
Ah, yes.
Yes, she
did. So because, it could, you know, damage your friendship.
Yeah. So I quite like her. I don't like him. I look at it and go, there's a couple of funny lines in it, but overall, it just doesn't do anything for me.
You know? I like MacGruber, always have. I've been a fan of the shit that he does on SNL. So, in a huge contrast on this show... I am endorsing a film that neither of you want to see.
and, Actually, I want to see that. So,
Look, it's the sort of thing that I would probably catch up with on DVD. I don't think I'd go to the cinema.
Oh, no, this is a cultural phenomenon. You'll be watching.
Oh, no, it's not. Yeah, it is.
He's got you there, Dave. If it goes big, man, you're going to have to watch
this. Look, if it goes big, I'll go see it.
Yeah.
Look, if it becomes
big for me is if it sells more than, if it makes more than $1 million.
No, that's not big.
That is huge, man.
Look, if it turned out to be a sensation and everybody was talking about it, it was on the talk of the town, sure, I'll go see it and we'll review it.
I'm going to remember that when Twilight 3 rolls around.
I'm just going to go see Twilight 3. I will be going to see Twilight 3.
I will not be on the show.
All right. Let's move on. Last piece of news for the day, and then we're going to get into our feature film review. Deadline Hollywood is reporting that Christopher Nolan has been hired to actually shepherd in the new Superman film.
Shepherd.
Now, the that's another massive thing. Right. he's not directing it, he's not writing it, and at this point, I don't even know if he's producing it. But he has basically been brought in by DC and Warner Brothers to say, do what you did with Batman here, and help the people get this shit together. Because, quite frankly, DC and Warner Brothers are about to lose the rights to Superman. They've lost all the court cases. If they don't get a film, excuse the pun, flying out the door soon, they lose it, and it goes back to the Schuster and Siegel families. So they're desperate to get another Superman film, or at least have Superman doing something on screen to hold those rights.
Look, what they really need to do... Personally, I thought Brandon Roth got a bad rap. I thought he was a great Superman. I really liked what he did. He could only do what Singer wanted him to do in the film. And, you know, I thought he was likable enough. He had enough of the Christopher Reeve nods that they were obviously doing throughout the entire thing, but I think he had the look, he had the chiseled. He wasn't as whiny as Tom Welling in Smallville. You know, I thought that he was a decent choice. But what they need to do in these films is they can't have Superman against a human adversary.
No, they need to ditch the Lex Luthor aspect of it now.
Look, I don't care. Doomsday, Brainiac. They need something that he can fucking pound at. Because the thing is that the biggest problem with all Superman is you got the most power... And he is known as the most powerful guy in the DC universe. And he's a fucking pussy on film. He doesn't do shit.
Yeah.
He doesn't do anything. He stands there and goes, hey, I'm just going to stand here and let
Yeah, he like stops a plane from hitting the ground and gets shot at. And you're just like, well, this isn't going
to
do anything.
You know, they need to have him go into Kandor or go, you know, to another planet and fucking hang out with Martians.
Space fights.
You know,
like
whatever.
That.
Against another fuck. Bring Zod in. I don't give a shit. General Zod, not Major Zod. Smallville stuff. Yeah, fuck that. But
We're talking 1980s era Zod.
Yeah, bring a Kryptonian. Bring somebody who can go toe to toe, so you can see like
we need to see them level
like
cities.
The burly brawl in fucking Matrix Revolutions. Yeah, you know that is the type of Superman.
No one from
fight
our generation likes Superman really, and the reason being is the fact that he is portrayed for us as a fucking pansy.
Yeah.
That's what we think of...
What Batman refers to him and every other guy is the big blue Boy Scout. And he fucking is. He's like, I got all these powers in the world, but excuse me, old lady, let me help you across the road while these bank robbers go across. And
I love in the... I think it was the very first graphic novel of Batman versus Superman when there's a thought bubble above Batman's head that basically says... If Kal-El ever realized how powerful he actually was, God help us all.
Yes.
You know, because it's like, and that's the thing. Just, I mean, Kal-El doesn't realize he is a god. You know, and
you see, I'd like to see like Superman versus Nicolas Cage. I mean, that would be fantastic.
Oh, I don't have the photo lined up. I'd like to see Nicolas Cage as Superman.
No.
I want to see something really bizarre, like Superman versus Doctor Who. I'm making the comic book
that
thing.
Is just out there.
Yeah, dude, no, seriously, let's combine fucking just, random shit, man.
Somebody's saying Metallo versus Superman would be epic. Sorry, Rob is saying awesome. Metallo versus Superman would be epic. Yeah, I agree.
Look, just anything. It was, you know, if I was watching, I think, Kevin Smith do one of his stand-up things, and he was just talking about it, and he was like, we get it, Bryan Singer, he's Christ, we get it. Can you just have him fucking hit something, please? He's like, he sat there and said, if I was doing the next Superman film, all I'd have in the trailer, in the credits, is him beating the shit out of like robots from like the Danger Room or whatever, yeah, or something like that. And he's like, and that's already more action than every other Superman film combined.
Dude, if they want to go with Dark Superman, just in the trailer having him punch someone in the head and just watch the head explode, that would be enough for me. Yeah. I would go and see that movie. I'd be like, I don't even care who that person is.
Oh, let's know what? Bring Bizarro in, whatever. But just have him.
I'd love to see Bizarro. That would be cool.
Have him just fuck somebody up. Yeah, Doomsday, whatever. Somebody that he can lay...
opposite of all earthly things.
That's right. He can lay waste to it all, you know, rather than you know... Sorry, it just... It hurts.
Yeah, well, all right, let's go back to the story, though. What do we think of Christopher Nolan leading this? Because, look, bottom line is, Superman isn't the dark, in tone storyline that Batman is. Is Christopher Nolan the right person to shepherd this?
I don't think it can be done.
Look, I think... He has enough love for the comic book thing. Like, I mean, he's not directing this. He's not writing it. So he's not going to lose any cred here. Just to have him on set means that, and this is the way I think about it, he is the most grounded person I can put comic book to movie in my head. So it's like, I'm not blaming him, you know, like, if this movie goes wrong. But I just like having someone on set that's going to stop them every now and then and go, you know how fucking stupid you guys sound right now? Mm. Because, I mean, like, so many of these movies just lose their shit like halfway through the movie. We always get a start that's usually kind of cool, and by the end of the movie, you're just like, "What the fuck is
going
on?" And
really, it's not about effects or production design. We know how to do all of that.
Look, all I'm saying is, no fucking kid, right? No crypto dog. No super girl. No fucking super boy. Nothing.
But this is why.
If you cast the right girl, you can bring Power Girl in.
Power Girl can all. There's always room for Power Girl in my Superman universe.
All I have to say is that if he's there and he's around the project, we have one sane mind on the project, and that may be good. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, good. All right, so let's move on, and we will say, Chris, please try and deliver us a Superman that we can actually be proud
of.
Or at least
abandon the project three quarters of the way through so that we don't blame you.
Please don't Lucas my childhood.
And again, I would actually say that if I had my druthers, I would say keep Brandon Routh.
Yeah, I really like the guy.
Recast everyone else.
Yeah. I don't think they can do it, man. I honestly don't think it can be done. And I can guarantee you, I reckon the way that they're going to do it is they're going to go off the new Superman and they'll make Lex Luthor the president of the United States and they'll run it like that, and it'll be Superman versus the government.
But that's actually an interesting storyline, to do the whole Lex Luthor as president, because that got very interesting.
They have to make him black.
Rob in our chat room has basically said, what's wrong with Super Pooch?
If I have to tell you, Rob, I have to
Alrighty.
Tell you.
Alrighty. Well, we're going to get into our feature review. We've all had the experience of watching Percy Jackson. We're in Australia. We use the Australian title. Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. Okay, the Americans have an extra bit to their title. Here's the trailer. We've actually shown this on the show once before a while ago when we were previewing it. Here's the trailer, though, just to refresh our memories, and then we're going to have a review of this. What are you doing? All right.
It's getting really hot.
Here we go. Oh, no, that didn't work. Oh, where are we? There we go.
And he's alive.
How long was that?
7 minutes. That's crazy, man. How do you do it?
I don't know. I just like being in water. It's one place I can think.
There are 12 Olympian gods. Big three are the brothers Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. The children of these gods were half human, half gods.
Hey, Mom. I thought this school was supposed to make things better.
Someday it'll all make sense. Percy Jackson, we need to talk.
Miss Dodds?
Whoa!
I found him. Who found me?
We've been expecting you.
The gods are real.
My father's Poseidon. God of the seas.
Between myths and legends.
Zeus's bolt is the most powerful weapon ever created.
It's been stolen. Between this world and the next.
If it's not returned by the summer solstice, there will be a war.
Our three heroes.
All demigods have inherited skills.
I definitely have strong feelings for you. I just haven't decided if they're positive or negative yet.
Who must stand and fight?
We'll find the bolt.
There's nowhere safe on heaven and earth for him now. Take this to defend yourself. It's a powerful weapon.
This is a pen.
Only use it in times of severe distress.
This is a pen.
Click it! Whoa!
Time has run out.
Maybe you're no son of Poseidon.
Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief.
All right, so that was Percy Jackson and The Lightning Thief, and you guys are hogging the camera, so I'm going to take the camera back for a minute.
Apparently we're hogging the camera, even though we have no control of where it goes.
No, I know, I'm just that kind of guy. All right, so I'm putting off talking about this film, as you can tell. All right, so this is Chris Columbus. Now, if you don't know Chris Columbus...
He discovered America.
No, Chris Columbus started his career, I should say, as a writer. He was very young. He was in his early 20s, and he wrote a little film that Steven Spielberg bought called Gremlins. And everybody, he was immediately the toast of the town, and Gremlins is actually a sensational screenplay. He didn't direct Gremlins, but he did write it. He then wrote another screenplay. Then this is in the era when they used to know how to make kids' films. He wrote Young Sherlock Holmes. So for Spielberg, he wrote these two films and then got to do his directorial debut with a little film called Heartbreak Hotel. Now, Heartbreak Hotel was about a young Southern family who kidnap Elvis Presley because the mother really loves Elvis, and they decide to make the mother feel nice. It starred a very young Charlie Schlatter, and was actually a very cute film. He's since gone on to direct other little films like, you know, Harry Potter. And and the funny thing about him, though, is that I find him a really, really white bread director. And when I say that, he has no edges. He doesn't push any boundaries. He takes what everybody else does, and he kind of has learnt on the fly. He's not film school graduate, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. I think his early films, including Adventures in Babysitting, was actually some of his best work. And as far as the Harry Potter films are concerned, you know, I quite liked the first two Harry Potter films when they came out. And I said, yeah, they're fun, they're good adaptations, and so forth. Unfortunately, other directors have come along and made much better Harry Potter films since he did his.
He had the hard stuff because
he had to create the world.
Well, not only that, he had to make it appealing to, you know, like the first Harry Potter is the least of favorite out of all of mine, but that's just because I don't identify with the character, because he's a kid. You know, the darker they get, in my opinion, the better they get.
That's right.
And so you know, he had to establish and set the tone. And you got to give him props for that, because he did create a pretty amazing looking world.
He did, and I think he did. He actually did a very good job of bringing Harry Potter to screen. I think other directors have stood on his shoulder and have made the world better and have made better films.
Yeah,
but yeah, he did. Now with Harry Potter coming to a conclusion, just like a few years ago when the studios were all desperate to try and get the next fantasy film franchise when Lord of the Rings was wrapping up.
Aragon
there was another one. The Golden Compass. Anyway, they've all failed. Now that Harry Potter is wrapping up, everybody is desperately trying to get the next Harry Potter type film. We've already had The Seeker, and we've had... there was another one that came out.
Aragon?
No, there was another kid one. Anyway, but the point is... No, I wouldn't put that in that class. But along comes Chris Columbus, and he says, well, there's actually a series of books written by Rick Riordan called Percy Jackson and the Olympians. And let's see if we can turn this into something, and thus we are given birth to The Lightning Thief. What did you think?
Greatest movie of all time.
Cool. All right, that's it. End of review. That's all we got.
So Dave's opinion's the only one that counts?
No,
I'm glad that the two of you are finally on board.
Actually, before you say anything, Dave, before you say anything, just for those who don't know what the film is, basically it tells the story of the Greek gods and their offspring, the demigods, who are living in the modern world. In this particular case, the story revolves around Zeus losing his lightning bolt. And they blame Percy Jackson, who is the son of Poseidon, as the thief. And he has to then go forth and do his adventure to try and find out who the real thief is and prove his innocence. There's the story in a nutshell.
Yes.
Now, Dave, go for it.
Look, for me.
Anyway. Oh, by the way, spoilers from the get-go, guys.
Look, I didn't mind it. Let's just say that I don't think it's even close to, you know, Harry Potter league as far as this sort of movie.
Nowhere near it.
Nowhere near it. I thought that there were some very nice special effects. I think they glossed over a lot of stuff just to move from set piece to set piece. To me, it was kind of like they were trying to be a little bit more edgy and sexual, I guess you could say, than the Harry Potter films. Look, I didn't mind it. I don't think I'll rush out to go and see it again, but I didn't sit there wanting to stab out my eyes like I did watching Twilight. you know, I mean, first of all, you have Kevin McKidd as Poseidon, who's Percy, or I guess they're saying his name's Perseus. Perseus's dad, which is just fucking awesome. I don't care, man. Kevin McKidd is your old man. That's a win in my book. I think Sean Bean was horribly miscast as Zeus.
Absolutely.
He had absolutely... To be honest, I could have seen it the other way around. I could have seen him as Poseidon and Kevin McKidd as Zeus.
That
would have had a lot more weight, because Kevin McKidd just has this fucking rumbling intensity about him. And Sean Bean's just... Every time I look at him, all I think of is fucking Ronan. And he's just like, "Fucking Raspberry Jam! We're done! Good job, boy! We're done!" And then pukes on the side of the road. So, he didn't convince me at all. Sorry,
yeah, but that came back to me, and I was just like, wow, yeah, he was.
You know, it didn't look... The other aspects for it was I liked the black guy who was playing the was it the satyr?
Really?
We'll come back to that.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's Mr. fucking Tropic Thunder, man. Mr. Booty Sweat. I fucking love that guy. And
seriously,
you know,
that's like the most token black guy I've seen in a movie in 10 years. They just put black people back 100 years just with that guy.
Let's give him every jive sentence we can give him.
Yeah. Oh shit, what's going on, man? What's going on? Oh shit, what's awful. Happening, man?
You see, you guys didn't like Not Another Teen Movie. You just don't get it. You don't identify with these people.
Yes, but that was joking about it. This was not joking about
Look,
it.
Look, there were a couple of things I thought that were kind of nice. Uma Thurman.
Rosario Dawson.
As Medusa. I have to admit, I really did love the fact that hell was located at the back of the Hollywood sign. I thought that was fucking
that was
awesome.
That's about where we... If hell really opened up in the middle of Hollywood, everybody would be like...
They're like, wow, it seems a little hotter and a bit more pollution around here.
I actually leaned over to Josh at that point, though, and said, boy, you wouldn't want to be, like, hiking in the Hollywood Hills if that thing just opens every time you walk past.
It opens when you say the thing. So you get a Greek tourist walking up to the sign and goes... Hey, what does that say? It says this.
That's what happened to all the Valley girls. You know, they're studying like ancient Latin or Greek or whatever. Like, oh my God, what does that say? Open the door to hell. But a few little moments. I loved, what's his name?
Steve Coogan.
Steve Coogan as the devil or Hades or whatever was so wrong.
I felt that I was a little bit upset with the as Dave put it, the Anglo take on the Greek Hades, because hell isn't hell in Greek mythology. It's not where people go to suffer for eternity. They go to
Hades
stay in limbo.
Yeah,
why don't they just gloss over this?
Look, I had a few problems with the mythology in general.
I have to say my last thing, and then you guys can rape it. I don't care. Speaking of rape, Rosario Dawson. I don't even remember the name of her character because I was just...
Persephone?
Persephone. All she wanted to do... Hence why I like the black guy, because he got to root her. Well, they alleged that he did.
No,
yeah,
no.
I'm sure
it did not. They said
no, it didn't even allege
we...
that at all.
Yeah, in my film, he rooted her.
That's why you like these films so much, because you're making them up as you go along.
Absolutely, absolutely. I take what they... I use the film as a building block from my experience, and I sit there and I go, he rooted her. And it's like the main female lead, the daughter of Athena. I can guarantee you, Percy, he put his sword in her scabbard. I can promise you that.
Oh, right.
But it's very light. I mean, you know, it's flawed as whatever else, but, you know, I don't know. I thought it was kind of fun in the
light,
way...
I think fairy floss is heavier.
You know, until Clash of the Titans, this will sate me. I'm really looking forward to reviewing that with you two guys.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Because I can guarantee I'll love it and you guys will be like, it was shit!
I'm just going to jump in before you, Josh, real quickly, because I'm just going to say that I thought the film was, I'll coin Dave's term, that's fine. It was light. it was extraordinarily light. I think this film could have been fixed, not to perfection. It wouldn't have made it a great film, but it could have been fixed to a point where it was more watchable by two things. One, a script rewrite. And two,
nudity.
Get rid of the satyr, because I hated him, quite nudity. Frankly. No, it's a kid's film, all right? Mm. Now, actually, to be fair, the original Clash of the Titans had boobies in it. Anyway, so...
I'm just trying to be real to the genre.
There you go. That's right. Togas. Let's go back and watch more Spartacus.
Yes. I'll be watching Caligula tonight.
I had some issues with the story in general, and I said this to Josh as we were watching the movie. I said, it's Greek mythology about Greek gods. They go to Olympus at one point. They have to go to Hades. They're looking for the pearls, and the map is giving them the secret locations of the pearls, which, I'm sorry, just felt like a level up in a computer game. It's like, we've succeeded. We got our achievement. What's next in our journal? Mm. So the entire film is structured like a video game anyway. But I had a real problem with the fact that the entire film was set in the United States. I had a real problem that this Greek mythology, the Greek training camp where they train the Greek demigods, is in like Nebraska or something, you know, wherever that was supposed to be. I have a problem that to get to Olympus, you go through the Empire State Building. To go to Hades, you go through Hollywood. It's like, really? Really? We didn't have to go to Greece at all during any of this? You know, I had issues with that. I don't hate the film. I don't hate the film. You know, it was watchable. I sat there, I watched it. I'm not really rushing out to see it again. I would actually say...
Yeah, no, I'm going to counter with everything that you always say when I bag a film. I'm going to take the little geek to see it, and I'm sure he'll love it as a 10-year-old.
I said that when I came out. I said, my son would love it. Mm. I don't know if I want to go pay cinema dollars again for it, and so I think I'll wait till it comes out on DVD and he can watch it there, unless his mother wants to take him to go see it. But he will love it, absolutely. And it will appeal to the 10-year-old boys. Now, interestingly enough, here in Australia, it got an M rating. Mm. Why did it get an M rating?
I think because the female lead has a nice chest. And I think that usually leads to an M rating.
Now, okay, maybe. Now, on the upstrokes to this film, I think the best sequences or the best things in this film were Uma Thurman as Medusa. I thought that sequence was really good.
How good was the Hydra?
The Hydra was actually a really neat-looking monster.
And I think the water effects that they did, especially in the final sequence, I think they did an amazing job with those.
The satyr's legs were good. The centaurs looked good. The problem that I had with all of that...
Oh, sorry, we have to say Pierce Brosnan as a centaur was...
Fucking cane? Put down that stupid stick. You look retarded with it.
I would have liked to have seen... I could get in trouble for this. I would have liked to have seen Christopher Reeve as a centaur.
Right. Yeah, you're getting hell for that one. What was I saying? All the effects were really well done. The only problem was that this film is 4 years too late.
Yeah.
Because every one of those effects that we were supposed to go ooh-ah to were done in Narnia.
Yeah.
The satyrs were done. The centaurs were done. The water... elementally things were done. All that was done in Narnia. We've already seen it, you know? And so we didn't have that ooh factor. We kind of went, yeah, that looks good. Yeah, whatever.
We still went ooh over the Hydra, though, because I haven't seen that done.
The Hydra was nicely done. He was a nice-looking CG creature. He was well done. I hated the flying shoe.
I didn't like the mechanic because it made him, until the end... He just looked like it was Mary Poppins. He was just like floating around and all of that.
It was silly. So overall, I'm dying to hear Josh's opinion now. But and the other part that I actually liked, and I'm going to second Dave on this, is that I am a big fan of Rosario Dawson.
Mm.
And wow, when she hit the screen all dressed in leather like that, my jaw hit the ground. And, you know, she made everything worthwhile for those scenes just because I just kept watching her.
Yep.
The only problem I had with the Medusa thing, and Josh and I said the same thing, was they spoilt the scene by giving him that stupid line. That Arnold Schwarzenegger type line of, what was it, don't lose your head or whatever it was. Mm. After, you know, at the end.
Did you guys stay after the credits, though? Did you stay for the credits?
Yeah.
I think we need to make mention of the awesome douchebag role of Joey Pants. and especially his up-and-coming at the end of the film, busting into the refrigerator finding the head of Medusa there. He's just like, hey, what's going on here? Just like,
we saw it with a friend of Josh's last night, and he actually made the observation, but it's true. best piece of Foley work, best piece of sound mixing in the entire film is that sequence, because the screen goes black and you hear him turning into stone, but it's off to one side.
Yeah.
And you get this this awesome sound cutting through everything. Really nice piece of sound. Josh, hit me with it.
And also Catherine Keener, totally wasted.
Absolutely. And I love her completely. Waste. What was the point of the entire character? You know,
I think that comes down to what I'm going to do, because I mean, like, as horrible as this film was for me, because, you know, I'm the harsh critic, I'm going to pull myself back and remove a lot of what I hate about the film, because, as you were saying, it's not designed for my age group.
No.
So therefore, I have to remove certain things. But the things that I'm not going to let slip are, one, what we were talking about before, which is that when it comes down to it, the biggest problem with this film is the writing, is the script.
The script is awful.
Like, it comes down to small things. It's like, all of this could be put together in a situation that I would be fine, you know, watching, if we had just focused on the few things that they needed to fix, which were just so many small things that pull someone like me out of a film. Like, I mean, bad dialogue, incredibly bad dialogue. The scene which you and me hated, that end of that scene was, the line that was said was, "I guess we're on the highway to hell." And then play Highway to Hell. We all get the joke. You didn't need the line beforehand. That was, actually pisses you off.
That was Chris Columbus's heavy-handed direction all the way through this, because they also, when they pull into Vegas, there's a shot of them in the car. They're going, "Ooh, ah, Vegas. Oh, there's the hotel." And then we cut to a big sign at the hotel. And you sit there and go, "We didn't need the scene in the car." We
really like when they enter Vegas and there's the sign that says, "Welcome to Las Vegas," and there's two people getting married underneath the sign.
We didn't need that.
We totally needed that. It's American. They don't know where it is.
Exactly. Like, I mean, the whole thing is, anyone who's anyone in the world knows what Vegas is. We don't need a revamp of what Vegas is and why Vegas is beautiful. If the movie's not about Vegas, we don't need to be reminded of the thing.
It's actually all they needed was John Favreau to walk across with like five guys, and everybody would know.
It's one of those sayings where you say it's overwritten. Mm. We continually say things where we just need to show it.
Well, you know, you get that heavy-handed direction that you get with something that's so heavily producer and, you know, sort of directed, because you can tell just with bad lines that are obviously for the kids, for to make the scene cool or urban or stuff like that. There are so many of these lines that you can't follow the storyline, nor can you like any of the characters, because everyone in the film bothers you, because every time they start to show some sort of acting promise, there's a line in there that just doesn't seem to fit. And this was the main reason that I had a problem with the film. The film could have been fine. The actual visual presence of things on the screen was fine. I could handle any of the action scenes. But the problem was that when it went away from the action scenes, as you said so perfectly last night, this movie could be saved by people talking less. Because every time someone talked, it annoys you.
That's my opinion of every movie, though.
Particularly the guy playing the satyr.
I just think you guys hate black people. That's just quite honest. This is the feeling I'm getting across.
Look, he could have been pink and I would have still said the same thing, all right? It's just, it was the overblown...
You can't blame the guy, though, man. He's just reading the fucking script that
they gave
him.
His delivery was awful. Not that I think you could, but you could try and make some of that. I found him irritating every time he was on screen.
Yeah. You just hate black people.
It's got nothing to do with black.
Nah, I'm totally going there.
No, because it's
I'm playing that card.
To me, the big line sort of thing, that the problem that I had with him is that his lines never fit. Or never did he feel part of the group. You never felt a connection between him and his friend. It's like both of them seem to be just reading lines. You never got, like, he's like, the scene where he's sitting on the bed and he's like, "I tried to protect you, but I'm not very good at it," and all this. I didn't believe him for a second.
No.
Didn't believe him at all. Just reading lines from a page. And just, yeah, so...
So I just have to interrupt for 1 second and say, Rob, really, are you going to say that comment in the chat room? He said World of Warcraft before Narnia. Dude. Do you know when Narnia was written? not quite. And also, we're not talking about just having satyrs on screen or centaurs on screen. We're talking about the idea of making them realistic on screen, where we look at it and go, "That's an amazing effect," and they actually pulled it off. It was already done in Narnia. World of Warcraft looks like a computer game. I'm sorry. It's not the same. Not the same thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, we're sidetracked.
No, I'm just saying that at the end of the day with this film, this breeds like any other of its kind, as you were saying. It has that foul stench of kind of Aragon or any of those kind of movies, where it's a great read, probably, for that age group.
It makes me
that
curious just, to read the book, or exactly. read one of the books at least.
Yeah, because you just get a feeling that if you pull away, you know, sort of all the little things that we hate, like the areas or the brilliant part that I was talking to you in the film, I loved your response to when I turned around and went, when they're in the casino, and I turned around and went, "Would they get money to gamble?" And you went, "Oh, that's the least of its problems." It's just there. It's a story that basically has been handled badly because it's like it's something that producers have gone, this could be good, and they've just asked for everything to be chucked on top of it. If we had left it as the story without any of the added things, poker face being played in the scene, which I just thought did not fit at all. Everything about
it's because you're a cynic. The young kids love that music.
I'd like to point out that the screenplay was written by a man, and I'm sure the pronunciation is Craig Titley, but it's spelt Craig Titley, and I think that is actually so much more an apt name for him at this point, because the screenplay I think is the greatest villain here. I think this film was so badly written. It was soul-destroying.
You know what? I want to offer both of you a little challenge.
Sure.
Which is considering that today has been very much of the sword and sorcery done bad sort of philosophy. It's a show that is also produced by Sam Raimi, which is the one I was telling you about last week, called Legend of the Seeker. I would be very intrigued to see if you guys could watch maybe 2 to 3 episodes, the first 2 to 3 episodes of it. And just tell me, because what they do that is it's fairly well written, it's very well acted, and they take the action sequences very seriously, but it's still a family-friendly, like you don't see blood or anything like that. It's still a very family-friendly show. I'd be very intrigued to see what you're
doing. All right, let's do that for TV.
On that, because, sure. I mean, even though they're well into the second season, it's something that I feel guilty watching, because I sit there and, because, you know, it's like, you know, hot chicks, but not exploitative hot. It's just, you know, like good-looking women, but they can fight. The acting is great. It's got whatever his name is from Train Man from The Matrix, Bruce Benz. He's fantastic. He plays like the gnarly old wizard. And I don't know. I think it
was shot in New Zealand.
Yes. Yeah. The lead character is an Australian guy, but he puts on a very convincing American accent. And
New Zealand at the moment has got a lot of productions. Like Spartacus is shot there too at the moment. So.
And I'd just like to see, because they do very little CG work as far as in action sequences, unless it's like a demon or whatever else. It's very, very grounded, and I think and they do use the slow motion a lot in the fight scenes, I think they use it to effect quite well. So I'd be really, really intrigued to see what you guys
and I do apologize, Rob has actually now corrected me, basically saying he was being sarcastic at the time, and he's actually thrown the date in for Narnia. so yes, I stand corrected. Yeah. All right, final words. See it, don't see it.
Look, if you've got a kid, go and see it.
But, if you're part of the Twilight teen era and you enjoy, you just want a film to take, you know, to go see on a Friday night, and you're not my age, then go see it.
I'll go one step further and I'll say it was better than Aragorn.
And Twilight.
and Twilight. If you've got a young one in the house, I don't know why it's rated M, really.
Look, if you
there's
like
nothing the, disturbing in
if
it.
If you like these sort of films, right, if you like Harry Potter films and all of that, this is nowhere near as good. It's in the same vein, kind of.
It's the same genre.
Same genre. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you enjoyed Harry Potter, you'll probably enjoy this to an extent.
It will tide you over until the next Harry Potter.
But
put it that way.
If you're looking for a movie and you can't be bothered and you're not going to see it till next week, then you may as well wait and watch Shutter Island, because it's not worth it.
Fair enough.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, Josh, I'm actually really curious to see Shutter Island with you, and I'm really curious to review Shutter Island, because he's built this up so much in his mind.
I hope
this in my head has to be the greatest film of this year.
Is it wrong? I hope that it's shit.
He's going to be
so
disappointed.
I hope that I walk out going, it's shit, and you walk out going, oh my God, and you're crying and you shiver
and you shudder a few times. You know that never happens, right, Dave?
Now, Rob has actually pointed out in the chat room, now Legend with the Tom Cruise film was a great fantasy creature movie that looked decent. I agree with you. It looked fantastic.
Tim Curry, bring it.
Tim Curry. So Rob Bottin was the same guy who did the visual effects for The Thing. Mm. So, and he won an Oscar for his makeup work in that. Unfortunately, the film itself actually kind of lets itself down. The production design and makeup and everything. But Rob, here's a very interesting point for you. Which version? There's two versions of Legend. There's the American cut and there's the international cut. The American version actually is a darker, slightly more sinister cut, and it has a Tangerine Dream score. And the international version is a lighter, more fairy tale feeling, and it has a Jerry Goldsmith score. And they're actually very different films. And if you buy it on DVD, you can actually get the Ultimate Edition, which has both versions of the film. Mm. And it's really interesting to just watch both because, wow, the American version actually has in it one of its opening scenes has the Tim Curry Legend character, Darkness character, sitting on his throne while the goblins are like tearing apart a body in front of him with this huge codpiece erection in front of him. He's thinking, this is not the film I watched. It's like, this is not the film I saw in the 80s. It's very, very odd indeed. I actually preferred Legend to Percy Jackson, though. Anyway. So I would actually say that Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the Lightning Thief, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, depending on which way you go, I'm going to say, if you really can, wait for DVD.
I'm going to say if you're a guy, watch Labyrinth. You'll get a lot more out of it, mainly Jennifer Connelly's young chesticles.
Jailbait.
Hey, she's not anymore.
Not anymore, that's true. At the time, though. All right, we're going to get ourselves out of here, guys. Next week, as Josh has pointed out, we are going to be reviewing Shutter Island.
Really? I thought we said we'd do Wolfman.
Yeah, but Shutter Island is actually one that I did forget about it. So.
And also, it's not horror, so you're probably going to enjoy it more.
It's Scorsese.
I'm just wondering if I'll get time.
Anyway, we'll talk about it off air. I will put it on the fan page early in the week, which film we're doing, so that in case you want to play along with us. Don't forget that this week's Movie Fan House, now they've got a new host as well, Jesse, so it's Charlie and Brad and Jesse. Movie Fan House at moviefanhouse.com. Dave and I are going to be on this week's episode, and we're reviewing The Wolfman with them, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm Wolfman.
And Dave says he wants to test their explicit tag. I think he wants to try and burn it out.
The first thing I'm going to say on the show is they're going to be like, welcome, Dave, and I'll be like, cunt. And just see how many viewers drop immediately.
Okay, so this is the address for those who want to find the episode and listen to us on their show. And we also want to shout out to our friends, the Real Junkies, at WeekendRonan.com. They do a tequila-fueled movie reviews, and it's been a lot of fun. Although I have to say, for the last few episodes, Fox has been sitting out because obviously he's been busy, and I do say, come back, Fox. We miss you.
He's probably been working on Black Hawk helicopters.
Probably.
I forgot.
What are you guys babbling about over there?
Don't worry. Don't worry. Keep going.
Just a couple of things. You can leave feedback if you agree or disagree with our takes on any of our reviews or any of our news. You can send feedback at feedbackgeekactually.com, or you can send us or leave us a voicemail at Sydney number 02-8011-3167. We do have a fan page on Facebook, which we kind of feed a lot of our material over to, which is at facebook.com/geekactually. That actually covers both of the Geek Actually shows, the tech and this one, but there's also, Dave, a Platforms fan page.
Which is Platforms Live.
Platforms Live.
And the story behind that is quite simple. I was drunk. Yes, you can fan that. And if you have any desire in the gaming world, that would be your first shot. And we're actually running a competition that goes off until Monday-ish to win an awesome Dark Void statue. So make sure that you check
that. A couple of entries, and we're pretty close to making a decision.
Yep.
And if people want to find out more about that, you should be listening to Platforms.
You should.
You can actually watch it live Monday nights at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Time, or you can download the podcast from iTunes.
Though we do recommend that you watch it live because we do try to make it a visual interactive show. Mm. We have a quite an active chat room, and things do get a little
wild. The chat room is insane sometimes. So now we also have a new podcast that we started last week, which is called Geek Actually Tech, and it's the tech component that this show used to have pushed off into its own show, and we do that on Wednesday nights live at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern, so you should come along and check that out. It's kind of fun. We do one serious in-depth discussion, and we cover a little bit of news, and last week we did the iPad, and we were talking about that. Okay.
Awesome show.
It is a good show. I enjoy it. And we do that with Shane. It's a very different tone show. It's very quiet.
It's because I'm not there.
No, it's because we have to make sure Shane can be heard. So we have to bring it down. All right. I think that's all of our pushing and plugging and everything else. Is that correct?
I think we're done.
Wow. God. We've pulled this show in at an hour and a half. I'm very impressed. We're trying to make the shows an hour and a half, guys. So, okay. Where can we find more about you, Dave?
You can find me on GameArena.com.
Cool.
I do some reviews for them. Official PlayStation Magazine, Australian Penthouse Magazine, and on the website. Or at my blog, which is feeltheawesome, hyphen in between each word, at Blogspot.
Cool. And Josh, where can we find out more about you on the internet?
Well, obviously at Facebook, Josh Philpott. Also, obviously, on the platform's live page, which we usually update every couple of days. And here.
Here, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. All right, you can also track me down if you – you can always track me down on geekactually.com. But you can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/DaveMcVeigh, or twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh. In the meantime, guys, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions we hopefully answered in the movies. I don't think they were in Percy Jackson. But anyway, that's a whole different –
I don't know. How not to answered my film. Question, how to ogle a 16-year-old girl in Rosario Dawson.
Yeah. Okay, that works. All right. Yeah. See you all, guys. Used my words. See you guys next week. We'll be right back.